This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 671 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has bombed and attacked areas across Gaza this week, killing at least 730 Palestinians and injuring nearly 4,500 between July 30th and August 6th, according to the official records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. More than 130 Palestinians were killed between Tuesday and Wednesday alone, 87 of whom were killed while trying to acquire food aid. Aerial footage of Israel's 22-month rampage of destruction of nearly every square inch of Gaza was released to Western audiences this week, as a few Western reporters accompanied airdrops of scant parcels of aid. Some images were released before Israeli officials threatened journalists that these aid drops could be canceled if media workers shared the footage any further. Israel's attacks this week targeted residential buildings, tent shelters, and health clinics, while the army issued new forced displacement orders in northern and central Gaza. The United Nations Humanitarian Office stated on Wednesday that the new orders span 1.5 square miles across 5 neighborhoods in Gaza City and Khan Yunis governorates. Shelter materials have not been allowed to enter Gaza since March 2nd. The few shelter materials that are available on the local market are extremely expensive and limited in quantity, putting them out of reach for most families, the UN stated. Israel also attacked tents of displaced people west of Khan Yunis on Wednesday, killing at least 2 women, while other airstrikes struck areas east of Gaza City, killing at least 3 people. Reporter Saad Hezbollah filmed a young boy desperately searching through the rubble for his grandparents, who were killed in an airstrike in Gaza City earlier this week. At night on Tuesday, August 5th, Israel bombed a health clinic belonging to the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA. The building had been used as a shelter for displaced families. A mother sheltering there with her children told Al Jazeera reporters that they were sitting, quote, when suddenly everyone started running. People told us we had 10 minutes before the clinic would be bombed. I grabbed the kids and ran without taking anything. We moved about 200 meters away and waited. The strike hit the building. Around 1 or 2 a.m., when things calmed down, we went back, but everything was gone. The tents were torn apart, everything destroyed, she added. Journalist Ahmed Adanaf captured the bombing of the Sheikh Radwan Health Clinic building on video. Israel also bombed buildings belonging to the Palestine Red Crescent Society several times this week. A Red Crescent worker captured video of the bombing of the Khan Yunis headquarters on August 3rd, which killed one staff member, injured 3 others, and sparked a fire. Quote, our headquarters location is well known to the occupying forces and is clearly marked with the protective red emblem. This was not a mistake, the medical organization stated. While medical staff attempted to extinguish the fire and inspect the damage after the first strike, the Red Crescent reported that the building was hit again on the second floor and then again on the ground floor. Quote, the repeated strikes during evacuation and rescue operations clearly demonstrate that the shellings were deliberate and systematic, the Red Crescent stated. On August 6th, just 3 days later, the Israeli army targeted the building again, firing an artillery shell into the 8th floor. Western and regional states who remain in lockstep with Israel and its genocidal policy are continuing their attempts at public relations management by boasting of airdropping meager amounts of food aid. While the crossings remain largely sealed, While Palestinians are killed in vast numbers at U.S. and Israeli so-called aid distribution sites, and while the Gaza population is facing catastrophic levels of starvation. This week, Canada, Germany, and Belgium, along with the UAE, Egypt, and Jordan, airdropped aid as Gaza government officials once again warned that the amount of assistance is only a small fraction of what is needed. On August 1st, Palestinians in Gaza filmed themselves opening up some of the airdropped parcels from Spain, showing that some of the food packets were covered in black mold. The Gaza Ministry of Interior affirmed, quote, that the negative effects of parachute drops and the chaos, destruction, and loss of life and property they create are far greater than any benefit they provide to our starving people. The optimal way to provide relief to our people and end the humanitarian crisis and systematic starvation is to open the land crossings and allow the flow of abundant quantities of humanitarian aid and food supplies on a daily basis and for extended periods. And these humiliating airdrops continue to kill starving people. On Monday, Uday Al-Quran, a nurse at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, was killed when an aid box fell from the sky onto his tent shelter. Just days before he was killed, Al-Quran was filmed denouncing the airdrops. Quote, "This is a humiliation," he said. "This is a humiliation first and foremost. The aid is not enough and isn't enough to fill half a truck." Al-Quran went on to show the paltry amount of aid from an airdrop, which he said was filled with sand. Meanwhile, Israeli forces at the Gaza boundary crossings and Israeli and American mercenary forces operating the private so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites continue to trap, injure, and kill starving Palestinians every day. The Health Ministry stated on Wednesday that at least 1,655 starving Palestinians have been killed and 11,800 have been injured since the end of May while trying to obtain food aid. On Friday, August 1st, Al Jazeera's Anas al-Sharif reported that for the first time, Israeli soldiers used silencers on their weapons to shoot at starving Palestinians seeking aid in Gaza. He spoke to multiple witnesses who confirmed the use of silencers in Beit Lahia, while the Trump administration's envoy Steve Witkoff and the U.S. ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee visited Gaza for several hours to tour the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation's operations. Anas al-Sharif said that Israeli soldiers were trying to inflict casualties without drawing too much attention. Huckabee, who is an evangelical Christian Zionist, said on Wednesday that the Trump administration is looking to scale up the number of GHF sites, expanding the 4 sites to an eventual 16. At the Kuwaiti hospital in Khan Yunis, the hospital's director, Dr. Suhaib Al-Hams, issued a public appeal to Palestinians to avoid the death traps because his staff cannot treat the sheer amount of victims coming in with gunshot wounds. He said on Wednesday that his hospital's wound dressing department was out of service, quote, due to a shortage of medical supplies. A group of United Nations experts this week called for the immediate dismantling of the GHF, demanding that the private company and its executives be held accountable and to allow, quote, experienced and humanitarian actors from the UN and civil society alike to take back the reins of managing and distributing life-saving aid. The experts urged member states to impose a full arms embargo on Israel due to its multiple violations of international law and suspend trade and investment agreements that may result in harming the Palestinians and hold corporate entities accountable. More reports are emerging of Palestinians who have disappeared while attempting to collect aid at the private U.S.-Israeli killing fields masquerading as aid distribution sites. This week, Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights and MENA Rights Group documented the case of 5 Palestinians, including a child, who disappeared at Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites. In 3 cases, the Israeli army acknowledged their detention, but denied having the 2 others, including the 16-year-old child, in their custody. The human rights groups say that of the 3 men that the army acknowledged taking from the so-called aid sites, quote, the Israeli army refused to disclose their place of detention and denied them their right to access legal counsel, placing them in incommunicado detention and at heightened risk of torture and ill treatment. In an appeal, the groups urged the UN Working Group on Enforced or Involuntary Disappearances to intervene with the Israeli authorities to clarify the fate and whereabouts of the five disappeared Palestinians and to immediately release those detained. The NGOs, quote, also requested that the UN Working Group address a communication to the GHF and to the relevant U.S. authorities in light of the mounting number of cases of enforced disappearances occurring at the aid distribution sites operated by the U.S. Israeli-backed organization. These five documented cases are only the tip of the iceberg, the groups say, and reveal yet another disturbing pattern of grave human rights violations committed by Israeli authorities in Gaza: abductions of Palestinian civilians seeking humanitarian aid at distribution sites operated by the GHF. The Gaza Government Media Office issued a series of statements over the past week on the worsening of the humanitarian crisis and the reinforcement of engineered chaos in Gaza in the context of Israel allowing in a trickle of aid trucks that fail to meet the enormous need of starving people. The media office stated on August 6th that over the past week and a half, the total number of aid trucks that have entered the Gaza Strip was only about 850, an average of 85 trucks per day, or about 14% of the required aid. Gaza needs at least 600 trucks of aid and fuel per day to meet the minimum demands of the health, service, and food sectors, the media office added. Most of the aid, the media office notes, is being looted by armed gangs working with the Israelis. There are approximately 22,000 aid trucks stuck at the crossings, the media office stated, quote, most of which belong to UN and international organizations and various entities. The Israeli occupation is deliberately preventing their entry as part of a systematic policy of engineered starvation, blockade, and chaos as part of the ongoing genocide. On the night of August 5th, at least 20 Palestinians were killed and dozens were injured when an aid truck overturned on top of people who were trying to obtain food. The Israelis forced the truck driver to drive on unsafe and damaged roads, which it had previously bombed and were not suitable for passage, the media office stated. The Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza reported on Thursday that at least four new deaths had been reported due to starvation, bringing the total recorded number of victims of Israel's starvation policy to 197, more than half of them children. Among them this week was 17-year-old Atif Abu Khater, who died on August 2nd. His weight had dropped from 154 pounds to just 55 pounds when he died, his family said, roughly what a 9-year-old child should weigh. Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud reported from Gaza City, saying, quote, we hear from his family members and others who knew him that he used to be a local sports champion. He ended up losing a lot of weight, becoming acutely malnourished, and ultimately dying. He was one of thousands of severe malnutrition cases throughout Gaza. Doctors and medical staff are overwhelmed, meanwhile, with mass casualties and dwindling supplies, fuel, medications, and their own energy, as they too are starving. Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, the director of Al Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, said that his hospital's occupancy rate is at 300% and warned that anesthesia and blood units are in severely low supply. Quote, many of the injuries we receive are concentrated in the upper parts of the body. We are losing wounded people due to the lack of sufficient operating rooms, he told Al Jazeera Arabic. Dr. Tarek Loubani, a Canada-based emergency physician who is currently working in Gaza, told Al Jazeera on August 6th that there has not been a day in the last 2.5 months when there has not been a near complete shortage of blood. Quote, I cannot get out of my mind one of the cases in which a 1.5-year-old boy was right in front of us with a tiny little wound that happened to hit an artery. He was bleeding quite a bit, but not so much that he had to die, Loubani said. He was small, obviously malnourished, and all he needed was a little bit of blood. However, it was a tent massacre, and so every single member of his family had died. As a result, they weren't able to donate blood, he added. By the time we were able to find somebody to go and donate blood and bring it, we could see that even if we gave him blood, we weren't going to be able to follow it up, and that blood could be used to save somebody else. We had to sit there, watching a little boy who we knew was savable and treatable die in front of us, Lubani said. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Hunger Makes Life Hell for Journalists by Iman Hillis, writing from Gaza. I can barely function as a journalist, and I can't even explain why, Iman writes. Quote, I am a fact-checking journalist. My job is to sit in front of my laptop and debunk false and misleading claims. Now as I sit, trying to type in a word, my fingers freeze and my brain refuses to connect one sentence to the next. This has been the issue for the past 4 months, ever since my family began surviving solely on lentils. No bread, no sweets, not even spices, just salt. Now, nearly 5 months after Israel announced its complete aid blockade on March 2nd, food is barely found in the markets. Even the animal feed that people resorted to eating during the severe food crisis in the early months of 2024 is now unavailable. My body has become weak over these months, losing 7 kilograms, weight I never wanted to lose. Skin on bones, this is what we are right now. In early July, Iman says that she fact-checked a claim made by a pro-Israel publication which is known for denying all of Gaza's suffering. She writes, quote, it had been publishing material denying that there is a food crisis in Gaza. The claims were accompanied by videos of the barely functioning restaurants. With an empty stomach, I visited the restaurants in question. I found them empty of customers. An owner of a restaurant showed me the restaurant's fridge. It was completely empty. After I headed home, I intended to complete my investigation and submit it. I had all the necessary details and photographs as evidence. All that was left was to put it together and submit it, a task that normally takes me no more than 2 hours. I sat, tried to type, couldn't focus, gave up. I repeated the process. The 2 hours it should have taken me for that task turned into 4 days. 4 days of useless attempts to focus, attempts to ignore the hunger pangs and the constant thoughts of food. But what I am enduring in this round of the food crisis is not the only reason why I cannot work. Several previous rounds of the crisis have pushed me to this edge. Those are excerpts from Hunger Makes Life Hell for Journalists by Iman Hillis, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine and around the world. Members of the Samir Project, a mutual aid organization in Gaza, supported play and music therapy with children at the Rifat al-Arir camp for displaced families. These sessions with the experienced therapist Jaber and his team provide a safe space for the children to express themselves through music and various activities, the Samir Project writes. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.